at which he was not unreasonably proud. The pages of the book had been laid out rather like an alphabet primer, with the Chinese characters written beneath their English meanings. Mannering had devised an index by which the characters could be placed together to form longer words. There was no phonetic translation, and for this reason the pocketbook occasionally caused more confusion than it allayed, but on the whole it was an ingenious and helpful conversational tool. Mannering set the tip of his tongue in the corner of his mouth, as he always did when he was reading or writing, and began thumbing through the book. But before Mannering found his question, Ah Suk answered it. The hatter stood up from where he'd been seated, next to the forge. The hut seemed very small indeed once he, too, was standing, and cleared his throat.
"I know secret of Crosby Wells," he said.
This was what he had discovered in Canyeri that very morning. This was what he had come to Arqui's dwelling to discuss.
"What?" Mannering said. "What?"
"He was in Dunstan," Ah Suk said. "Otago Field."
Mannering collapsed in disappointment.
"What's the use of that?" he snapped. "What's secret about that? Crosby Wells in Dunstan? When was Dunstan? 2 years ago? 3 years ago? Why, I was in Dunstan. All of Hokitika was in Dunstan."
Nielsen said to Mannering, "You didn't encounter Wells there, did you?"
"No," said Mannering. "Never knew him. I knew his wife, though, from Dunedin days."
Nielsen looked surprised.
"You knew his wife? The widow?"
"Yes,"
Mannering said shortly, not caring to elaborate. He turned a page.
"But never Crosby. They were estranged. Now, hush up, all of you. I can't hear myself think without a patch of quiet."
"Dunstan," said Walter Moody. He was stroking his chin with his finger and thumb.
"It's an Otago field.
Central Otago." "Past its prime now, Dunstan. It's all company dredges these days, but she was a shiner in her time." "That is the second time this particular goldfield has been referenced this evening," Moody said. "Am I right?"
"You are quite right, Mr. Moody." "Steady on, how is he quite right?"
"The gold that was used to blackmail Mr. Lauderback hailed from a Dunstan field. Lauderback said so."
"Lauderback said so, precisely," Moody said. He nodded. "I am wondering whether I trust Mr. Lauderback's intentions in referencing the name of that goldfield so casually to Mr. Balfour this morning."
"What do you mean by that, Mr. Moody?"
"Don't you trust him? Lauderback, I mean."
"It would be most irrational if I mistrusted Mr. Lauderback," Moody said, "seeing as I have never met the man in my life. I am very conscious of the fact that the pertinent facts of this tale are being relayed to me second-hand, and in some cases third-hand. Take the mention of the Dunstan Goldfield, for example. Francis Carver apparently mentioned the name of that field to Mr. Lauderback, who in turn narrated that encounter to Mr. Balfour, who in turn relayed that conversation to me tonight. You will all agree that I would be a fool to take Mr. Balfour's words to be true."
But Moody had misjudged his audience in questioning so sensitive a subject as the truth. There was an explosion of indignation around the room.
"What? You don't trust a man to tell his own story? This is all as true as I can make it, Mr. Moody. What else can he tell you except what he was told?"
Moody was taken aback. "I do not believe that any part of your story has been altered or withheld," he replied, more carefully this time. He looked from face to face. "I only wish to remark that one should never take another man's truth for one's own."
"Why not?"
This question came from several quarters at once. Moody paused a moment, thinking. "In a court of law," he said at last, "a witness takes his oath to speak the truth. His own truth, that is. He agrees to two parameters. His testimony must be the whole truth, and his testimony must be nothing but the truth. Only the second of these parameters is a true limit. The first, of course, is largely a matter of discretion. When we say the whole truth, we mean, more precisely, all the facts and impressions that are pertinent to the matter at hand. All that is impertinent is not only immaterial, it is, in many cases, deliberately misleading. Gentlemen," though this collective address sat oddly, considering the mixed company in the room, I contend that there are no whole truths. There are only pertinent truths, and pertinence, you must agree, is always a matter of perspective. I do not believe that any one of you has perjured himself in any way tonight. I trust that you have given me the truth, and nothing but the truth. But your perspectives are very many, and you will forgive me if I do not take your tale for something whole.
There was a silence at this, and Moody saw that he had offended.
Of course, he added more quietly, I speak importunately, for you have not yet finished your story.
He looked from man to man. I ought not to have interrupted.
I repeat that I meant no slight to anyone. Please, go on.
Charlie Frost was looking at our Sook curiously.
Why did you say that, Mr. Sook? He said. Why did you say that you knew a secret about Crosby Wills?
Our Sook turned his gaze on Frost and appraised him.
Crosby Wills strike big in Dunstan, he said. Many very big nugget. Very lucky man.
Nielsen turned.
Crosby Wills made a strike?
Mannering had also looked up.
What? He said. A strike? How much?
In Dunstan,
Sook Yong Sheng said again, still gazing at Frost.
Very lucky man. Big bonanza. Very rich.
Nielsen stepped forward, which rather annoyed Frost, for he had been the one to introduce this new line of questioning after all. But Nielsen and Mannering both seemed to have forgotten that Frost was there.
How long ago?
Nielsen demanded.
When?
Two.
Ah Sook held up two fingers.
2 years ago,
said Mannering.
How much? How much colour?
Said Nielsen.
Many thousand.
How much? Four?
Nielsen held up four fingers.
4,000?
Ah Sook shrugged. He did not know.
How do you know this, Mr. Sook?
Said Frost.
How do you know that Mr. Wells struck a bounder at Dunstan?
I ask escort,
said Ah Sook.
Didn't trust the bank, said Mannering. What do you think of that, Charlie? Didn't trust the bank.
Which escort? Gilligan's or Gracewood and Spears?
Said Nielsen.
Gracewood and Spears.
So Crosby Wells made a strike at Dunstan and then hired Gracewood and Spears to ship the bonanza from the field,
said Frost.
Yes,
said Ah Sook.
Very good.
Then Wells was sitting on a fortune all along, said Nielsen, shaking his head. The money was his very own. None of us believed it.
Mannering pointed at Ah Kui.
What about him? He said. He knew about this.
No,
said Ah Sook.
Mannering exploded with irritation.
Then why in hell does any of it matter?